Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers journey through the wormhole with Quark, Dax, and their good friends, Tom and Harry. Join us as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Your hosts today are Terry Farrell, our enchanting science officer, Armin Shimmerman, our beloved entrepreneur, and Robert Duncan McNeil, your favorite helmsman, and of course, myself, your forever ensign, Garrett Wong. Welcome. Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Yay!
The gang's back together.
I know. I'm so glad Terry is here because this episode has a lot of women's perspective, and we need you here, Terry. We need your thoughts.
Thank you. I'm also wearing my very political sweater.
Wow. What does it say? I don't see it. Oh, 1973.
Okay. Well, we're here, everybody. Robbie, can
yes,
you
sir.
Tell us what's been going on with your audio and things? Like, it's been nice.
I'm having, you know, I live on top of a mountain in the middle of nowhere, and I guess my internet's playing tricks on me today. So I hope you guys can hear me okay. What I hear from my end of you guys is like robots like this. Like that.
Well, the good news is we can hear you plainly. So whatever your internet is doing, it's only doing it to you and
yes.
to not us.
Yeah,
yes.
That's
yes.
true. And
yes.
Garrett is recording it. So what we're seeing
is
through
real
Garrett's
time
feed. Right.
Yeah. And it's totally
sorry
smooth.
You're experiencing it though. Because
it does suck. It does.
Those days of like hearing yourself on the phone when you call overseas.
Oh, the echo. Oh, it's horrible.
Oh,
it's horrible. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. No,
that's just the CIA listening. That's all.
Nothing
Robbie,
that interesting here.
Yeah. What have you been tweeting lately, Robbie?
Complete your staining project with Pittsburgh Paints and Stains now at Menards. Stain in one coat with ultra advanced semi-transparent stain. It's a stain and sealant in one that can be applied to damp wood and on hot, sunny days, allowing you to clean and stain your deck in one day. Save big money on Pittsburgh Paints and Stains and head into Menards to get your staining project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Let us begin with our poetry synopsis. Robbie, can you give us your limerick for rules of acquisition? Rules of acquisition.
Yes. Rules of acquisition. Here we go with my limerick synopses. There's a waiter named Pell who's brand new. We learn Ferengi treat women like poo. At Tongo, Dax is winning. The Dominion's just beginning. And women can do anything men can do.
Excellent. Excellent.
Wow.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Very
Dang.
Good.
I got poo in
you
there.
You did.
See,
that sent me, I almost.
And you got women in there as well. That's a good thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
My goodness. I was going to guffaw when you said poo. I had to hold it all in. Okay. Here we go with my haiku for rules of acquisition.
Yes.
Dax, the Tongo champ. Zek gives Quark important job. Pell must leave station.
Thanks for giving away the ending.
That was
very good.
I know.
Oh my gosh.
Just call me Spoiler Man.
Clever deception is in the air. Greed and power are never fair. Testing rules and winning, not enough in the final inning. Bittersweet, a soulful connection, lost on holding the rules of convention.
Wow.
Excellent.
You pulled in baseball too.
I love Terry's poetry because there's something so pure and heartfelt about it. Like my limerick is goofy and you know, Garrett's haiku is abstract, but there's something so
you're so sweet.
Beautiful about your poetry.
Yeah. She's a many talented lady, that Terry Farrell.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, she is.
Thank you, Armin.
Yes, she is.
But you know, I like that all three of us have our own voice.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And then Armin comes in
different.
And he is our scholar. He is our rogue scholar.
Can I just throw this out? I'm going to throw this out there. I want to challenge Armin if he feels like it. I love that he's doing the etymology, but it'd be awesome if he threw in a poem here and there, if he felt so inspired.
Oh.
That's all. That's all.
I'm a very competitive person. I wouldn't want to compete with the three of you.
No. Okay.
And he's a really good writer. He's a very talented writer. Yes, so exactly.
If I started on a poem, Garrett, it would end up a novel. Please don't.
Well, I'll tell you, it'll get to the point where the three of us will be sitting there going, we're the worst. We're going to be so crestfallen.
Exactly.
You'll wipe us across the floor.
And I would remind you to remember how special you are and your talents shine.
Yes. Yeah. Tell us some etymology.
Okay, etymology. Very short, from the Oxford English Dictionary. The word acquisition, from the old French word acquérir. And here's the definition, works perfectly for this episode. The action of obtaining or getting for oneself or by one's own exertion. First used in 1387. It was in something called the Higden Rolls. The acquisition of a wholesome merit. That was the first use of acquisition in the English language.
Wow. I love
the
that.
Acquisition of the wholesome merit. But it's interesting that it sounds like it's talking about a quality in people rather than acquiring a thing. Do you know what I mean?
You'll have to go back and find the person in 1387 who wrote it and ask. Probably and ask a man. You probably have to ask that guy.
Yeah, probably back then. Yes. They live by Ferengi rules.
They did. They did. Most of the world lived by it in the past. And unfortunately, a good part of the world still lives by it.
It's true. Aww. You know, I wouldn't trade what you offer in explaining the titles, because I have found, I'm just blown away by the thought that goes into each title. It never occurred to me how deep that actually goes. And so I want to thank you, Armin, because you're helping me appreciate it in a whole new way.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'll take an apple from the student anytime you'd like.
I'll bring you some.
I love it. Okay. So our guest stars, and let me see if I pronounce this right with all the accents on there. Hey, I'm going to say Helen Udi. I don't know if Helen is the right way or if she says it a different way. Do you know Armin? No.
I was actually struck by the fact this is the first episode that I've been watching of Deep Space Nine where I don't know any of the guest stars. I mean, I knew them when I worked with them, of course.
Right.
But you don't have a history. There was some of that I knew before I did the episode.
Yeah.
But here, I don't know any of the guest stars.
Okay. Okay. So Helen Udi played Pell and did quite a good job as Pell. I was very impressed. Mm-hmm. We also have Brian Thompson as Inglatu. Have any of you worked with Mr. Brian Thompson?
Not since.
Okay. All right. I met him at a convention. He's one of those guys. Really? Yeah. He's one of those guys that people recognize as being in countless numbers of TV shows and films as, you know, just comes in, does a small bit part, but you remember him because he's the super buff, always in shape guy. I met him at a convention. I was talking to him at the con. He brought his son with him to the con. Really nice guy. And he typically plays the heavy in everything that he does. Yeah,
so.
Everything. But as life goes, when you meet him in person, you realize, wow, this guy's really nice. You know, he's super nice.
He's a softy.
He's a teddy bear. But Brian Thompson, and I had no idea that he did Star Trek, and it's so cool to see him on this episode. Yes, of course we have Max Gradenchik as Rom, Emilia Crowe as Zyri. Tiny Ron comes back again as Mahardu, and of course Wallace Shawn. The wonderful Wallace Shawn as Zek. And those are our players for this episode.
I want to add one more.
Sure.
He's not credited. He's not a guest star per se. But that's David Levinson, who plays one of the Ferengi waiters, who was my stand-in.
Nice.
And his character's name was Broik. He's sitting there at the Tongo game as well. Let's give credit where credit is due. And
absolutely.
Fabulous.
So that's a shout out to David as well.
Nice.
Very cool. I did not know that. Okay. Teleplay by Ira Stephen Baer, story by Hilary Bader, and directed by good old David Livingston.
Who has sent me some notes about the episode.
Great. Oh, I can't wait.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're in for a treat. Okay. Opening shot is tight on Morn, snoring, sleeping.
As far as people on the show, let's also talk about Mark Altman, who plays Morn,
yes.
Who, like Mahardu, never had the opportunity to speak a word, but was certainly a presence and is an action figure doll as well. So,
wow. Is he really?
Yeah, that must have meant a lot to him, especially not getting to get a line.
That's a long conversation that we'll have at another time.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah. Okay.
But it worked. It worked.
It did work for that character.
Livingston actually went out of his way. He didn't say this to me, but it was obvious from his actions to make Morn very much a presence on the show.
Oh.
I wonder, yeah, this opening shot with Morn sleeping and then going, trying to get into Quark's, but the door's locked. It seemed like a lot of shoe leather, unusually long shoe leather for an opening where you could have just started in the game. But it was to build the world.
Yes.
With a person or character that is, on paper anyway, a background player.
Correct.
Yeah.
Odo calls him Morn. We find out that the background player has a name. We've seen him enough times so that we know that. But yes, this is a lot of coverage for someone who in our business normally would not be covered.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I agree 1,000%. But I'm going to just say it was so funny to watch him when Odo says, go. He says, what does he say? No sleeping on the promenade. Yeah. And then he says, go home. And what does he do? He doesn't go home.
He does imitate.
Well,
does
no,
home, but, home
he,
is
but, he, but the first thing he does, he goes straight. Yes, you're right. Home is Quark's. But it's just like the character that he was designed to be designed after, which is Norm from Cheers. Norm from Cheers would rather be at Cheers than be at home with his wife. And that's exactly what this character, Morn, was doing. So to me, it was hilarious. His home, was Quark's. He went straight there. But it's closed. It's closed because there is a game of Tongo being played by all the staff. And so basically, we see five Ferengis. We see five Ferengis, and Rom and Quark are included. They're playing Tongo. And they all make moves because we haven't really seen this game before. You know, we've seen Dabo, but this is something different. It looks like a roulette wheel again, but on top there's this sort of like a pail, and people are throwing bars of latinum and spinning this little outer ring thing. And I don't know the rules of how to play this. I'm guessing, Armin, they never told you guys the rules of how this thing
No,
goes.
We made it up, didn't we, Armin?
Yeah, we made it up.
While they were lighting, it was like, David Livingston was like, "Will you guys make it up?" And so we're like, "What do we do?"
Wow,
that is
Did they have it scripted? At some point, they do say like challenge or
Those are in the script. But those are scripted. What exactly the actions are? What's the intent of the game? Or what is it we're trying to get? No, we all made that up, as Terry said, as they were lighting.
We did.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's amazing.
It was a scramble, but it was fun because we were all super willing to jump in.
Okay,
good. Did you feel that way, Armin? I remember all were just like.
And to this day, I don't know whether Dabo means you won a Dabo or whether you lost a Dabo.
Okay.
Dabo, we all scream, but is that a loss or is that a win? I'm still trying to figure that out.
Maybe it's both because of the inflection of your voice on Dabo, right? But I love the fact that they did that and no one took it badly. It didn't land wrong where you thought, you guys should have prepared for us better. You should have given us exactly the rules. Nobody did that. No one got crazy like that.
As Mr. Brooks once said to me, we were very dutiful, very dutiful.
Yes.
We were. Especially that little crew of us.
Yes. But you think it's just all Ferengi playing this game because as it goes around the table, the camera tracks it around and then everyone turns and looks off camera. And then we have a reveal of Dax playing as well. And she wins the round.
I love that. Oh, I love that. And this is the first time they bring up the male female thing, the bias against females, because they do say, oh, that's because it's Curzon. He must have been the good player. And then Dax says something like, no, actually, Jadzia is a lot better than Curzon. So the beginnings of that.
Yeah, that's when Rob says, but I still prefer a Ferengi female, one who never wears clothes, never talks back, and never plays Tongo. So now we know, we established some rules, ground rules for the Ferengi, the Ferengi gender inequalities.
Gender rules.
Yeah, yes. Rules.
Exactly.
Horrible.
This is also where we meet Pell, this new waiter.
Yeah.
And I was a little confused at first because I was like, I didn't know who Pell was. Obviously, I'm not supposed to. But Pell offers up a bean to Quark that will increase his drink sales. And the bean basically dries out the salivary glands or something. So it makes you want to buy more drinks. And Quark and Pell discuss profits, and they both quote a lot of rules of acquisition. So they're on the same page there. And that's when the Grand Nagus calls and offers Quark this chance to be the lead negotiator in their big expansion into the Gamma Quadrant.
So the rules of acquisition, just to be brutally clear about this, for anyone who doesn't know, although I'm sure everybody does, are like the Ten Commandments for the Ferengi. And for a female to know anything about these rules is sacrilegious.
So it'd be like women reading the Torah back in the day.
Exactly the same. Exactly. Yeah. And then she says it, I'm quite sure of this, not only does she say how many there are, but she also says the commentaries. And that is very much like a Jewish student studying the Torah. It's not just what's written in the Torah, but also the commentaries as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So intellectuals, interpretation of the rules of acquisition.
It's scholarly, religious interpretation of the rules. And that's what we're talking about here, about the rules of acquisition.
Which could end up even being much longer than the actual rules of acquisition.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Got it.
I felt like Pell in this scene, didn't recognize Pell at all. I thought it was a young Ferengi because I definitely heard a quality in the voice. I was like, it doesn't sound like a fully matured man to
me.
I did not guess that it was a woman at this point.
And so small.
And small. So I thought it was
like a 17-year-old, like a 17-year-old.
Yeah, like a kid.
A little older than Nog. I think sometimes when thoughts come in, because we did it, even though we did it 30 years ago, I don't know if it's a memory coming back. No, wait, it's a woman. Or is it because, there's a real tell there?
I felt like that it was youth at this point, but I did before the ears came off, I was like, that's not a man. That's a woman. I knew something was up.
Well, it's interesting because the voice that the actress was trying to, put on this character as a man, and there was some affectation going on. To me, it sounded very much like Simpsons as the wife.
Oh yeah,
like Marge. But at some points when the voice got a little higher pitch or squeaky, it sounded like Bart Simpson. And that's what immediately when Megan was watching, she goes, wait a minute, is that the actress that does the voice for Bart Simpson? Because is it Yardley Smith or whatever? And we looked up and no, it's not. It's not her at all. It's Helen. But that's what I heard. All right. So we have a really wonderful scene now in Sisko's office. And basically we have Grand Nagus Zek is there. His ever present attended Mayhardu is there as well. It's Sisko.
Mayhardu. Mayhardu. Hit the first syllable. Mayhardu. Okay.
My hairdo? Sorry. Just kidding. Mayhardu, right?
So sweet.
Mayhardu. Yeah. Mayhardu. Tiny Ron is there as well. We have Sisko in this meeting and Major Kira as well. And right off the bat, he offers this Hyperion beetle snuff, which is clearly going to go up his nose. And it's pulverized, insect is what it is. And he takes a sniff and he starts sneezing and he's kind of pissed because he doesn't get the handkerchief to blow his nose fast enough from his attendant. So he's a little upset about that. But they basically talk about the fact that he wants to host a business conference here at Deep Space Nine with a race of beings from the Gamma Quadrant known as, now, do you guys say Dozai? Or Dozai, or do you? There's a couple of different ways Dozai. That people pronounced it in here, but I think it's Dozai for the most
mostly
part.
Mostly like a Z sound. That I heard. Yeah.
Dozai.
Yeah.
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 So they are going to come into the station to have this meeting, and what's cool is that there's one point where Kira is basically not excited about this meeting, basically trying to set the law that she's not going to stand for any funny business.
Well, she thinks that Ferengis cheat everybody. She gets up in his face, I don't trust
you
guys.
She's very confrontational, and then, basically.
Yeah. And then he mentions, hey, you guys need some bryzine nitrate, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden Kira's like, oh yeah, Bajor could use that.
Yeah.
And so he basically bribes her. He says, I'll give you some bryzine nitrate if, you approve this negotiation. And then as he's leaving, he says, yeah, I'll give you a 25% discount for something. And Sisko's like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. You said you'd give it. And Sisko basically out negotiates the Nagus here and says, if you want to have this meeting, you need to give it to him.
Yes, the Negus is very excited about that. He is impressed by Sisko's negotiation skills.
I have several comments about this scene, which bothered me as a Ferengi, not as a human, but as a Ferengi. First of all, what business is it of theirs about what goes on in Quark's bar? Is this not an open establishment? If we don't break any laws, what business is it of theirs?
Yeah.
Second of all, they are indeed bribing Kira, but then Sisko says you can't have it at all, and is that not a bribe as well?
Yes. You know,
there's fault on both sides.
Yeah.
And the thing that for me as a Ferengi watching this particular scene is you can see the utter disgust, primarily in Kira, but also in Sisko, about the head of a planet, the head of a nation, the head of whatever.
No.
Should he not get the same respect that all the other heads of planets that we have seen on the show get?
Yeah.
Whether you like his ethos, his ethics or not, is of no concern if you are following the Prime Directive. I can see why Kira has a problem. She's not necessarily Starfleet, so she doesn't have to follow the Prime Directive, but Sisko does, and God bless him, he does correct her on it. But even so, this immediate disdain for a group of people, to me, borders on, and this is a Ferengi speaking.
Racism, yeah.
On racism.
Yeah. Well, Armin, do you see that also from Kira as well? Yes.
Oh, most especially from Kira.
Even more so.
And God for Dax later on, who corrects that attitude, or at least tries to correct that attitude.
Yeah.
So I think we shouldn't overlook the fact that there's fault on both sides. Yes, the Ferengi are sneaky. Yes, that's their 285 rules of acquisition. They're not only their business practices, but their religious practices as well. Mm-hmm. But even so, should we not have respect for other people's ethics?
Yes.
Absolutely. And I think we've seen in previous episodes where Sisko has helped keep her in check with what the Prime Directive is. And I absolutely agree with you, Armin. It was, first of all, surprising about Sisko's attitude, but I think also that they're even having this meeting about having a meeting because you've already had meetings without having this conversation. It's just very bizarre. It's not like the Tulaberry wine's being delivered to Deep Space Nine.
That's right. And it's
we're not being
business.
Involved in your business. It's just the meetings happening there. It is strange.
It is Quark's establishment. He can have, as long as they don't break the laws, I get that.
Right.
The laws have to be respected. But what they do in negotiations, in my opinion, isn't necessarily breaking laws. And if Kira's worried about Ferengi cheating, then I've seen some of her actions as a Bajoran freedom fighter that aren't as, to a Ferengi, Ferengi don't kill.
Right.
Ferengis don't do that at all. The killing is an anathema to them. So I would have some problems with the Bajoran point of view as well.
Yeah.
And that's just me as a Ferengi, as an ex-Ferengi speaker.
I love your Ferengi point of view, Armin.
I do too.
I love it. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's what makes Deep Space Nine so great, is because I'm not saying that is right. It's wrong that he's showing the prejudice towards Ferengis. That's wrong across the board. But the fact that Deep Space Nine shows that is what makes it so great, because this is a Star Trek that shows all the moles and the warts. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Yeah. Which, so
it is
that's
a plus,
being
not
human.
A minus. It is a plus. We are showing the good sides and the bad sides to our lead characters.
Yeah.
And God bless the Dax character, the smartest, the one who's lived the longest, who has the most frame of reference. She is there to advise all of us. So what's the best thing to do and how to live together?
Dax is the voice of reason, the voice of knowledge, the voice of wisdom. Yeah.
No pressure.
Team Dax.
Team Dax.
Next scene, we go to Quark's quarters. Zek is having his ear hair combed and styled, which I thought was disgusting. Super close up. David Livingston, thanks very much. Zek is instructing Quark about these negotiations, tells him, get these tula berries. They could be the most profitable thing in Ferengi history because it can make the wine. And this is going to establish Ferengis in the Gamma Quadrant. So they're going to be set. So this is basically Zek's instructions to Quark, this is your big break, big opportunity.
Yeah.
Can we talk for a second about how amazing Michael Westmore's design of Wally Shawn's makeup?
Oh, it's
because
so
it
good.
Looks like candle wax melting.
Like he's melting, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It just gross and intriguing all at the same time.
And it has ear hair.
And it has
lots of ear hair. Okay, so we have a little time jump, and Quark, we're still in Quark's. Quark is telling Rom now about the tulip berries and how he thinks he's going to be super rich. And Rom wants to help. He wants to be a part of this. Pell is waiting tables at this point, swings by, does a little flyby, drops the...
Before you go on, I think it's essential for the episode that we do mention that while everyone is together in Cisco's... That Zek begins to hit on Kira. That's essential.
Oh, yes. That's
oh,
right.
Yes. Because that's a sweet kind of C storyline that just threads through.
Yeah.
I think it's really well done, too, because it just little splashes just little, through the whole episode. Yeah.
Back in Quark's, when Rom's hearing about the tulip berries and Pell is kind of eavesdropping, you can see him at this point. We think it's a him in the background. Pell runs by, drops the 48th rule of acquisition. Quark, I love that Pell seems to be more versed in the rules of acquisition sometimes than Quark.
Yeah.
Quark's like, oh yeah, that's great. Remind me what that's about. And Pell basically says, you know, if this works, then Zek is going to take credit. And if it fails, you're going to be blamed, basically.
Right.
And Quark is starting to realize that Pell's pretty smart, so makes Pell his assistant for 20% of the profits and gives the food tray to Rom.
Jealous Rom. Jealous envious, Rom.
And
upset Rom.
And I do
Rom.
Love how she says partner, and Quark's like, no, I don't need a partner. I need an assistant. I love how bold Pell is.
Yeah. Did you notice this scene? David Livingston did it in a oneer.
Yes, he does a number of scenes in this episode as a oneer. This is actually one of David's favorite scenes when we were discussing this episode. He says he's very proud of it. There's what he called a lot of do-si-dos in it, where one person moves off and then another one comes in. And all the while, and it's not just the principals, the people in the background are also doing the same thing. They're all moving. It is a day in the restaurant, in the bar.
And everybody's
moving, and David got all of that to work as one. God knows how many takes we did, but he got it, and that's the important thing. As I said to David, it's not in hindsight. It's not how many takes you took. It's rather that you got the perfect shot, and that's all that counts in the end.
And it's fun when you're not tired. When you're
not tired,
it's fun to keep doing it. But when you're exhausted and it's 2 a.m, you're like, oh my gosh, didn't we already get it? Why are we doing it again?
Oh yeah.
But he was a perfectionist. He is a perfectionist. And in the end, we're grateful for that he finally did that because it makes the episode better.
I liked working with him. I really did. He kind man.
Very kind.
Very easygoing. Just never lost his shit on the set. It just, I really, really enjoyed David Livingston.
He was telling me about the difficulties of being a guest director, although he was a line producer as well. That's what was his everyday job. But as a guest director, it's a hard place to be. Robbie, I'm sure you're aware of that, between the writers and the set. It is, you have the least amount of power, even for David Livingston, who was the line producer. Mm-hmm. There's a great deal of non-power, if I can put it that way, when you're the guest director. We should point out that David Livingston, perhaps even more than Frakes, I'm not sure because I haven't counted, but probably David Livingston directed more episodes of Star Trek than any other person alive.
Probably. I would think so.
But isn't it funny that when he wears his producer hat, he's supposed to save money, finish the day on time or early. And then when he puts the director hat on, he does multiple takes. He goes overtime.
Juicy.
Yeah. He did the opposite.
Because
let us
knew the
remember
real deal.
That David went to school to be a director, not to be a line producer.
That's right.
So he wants to use the skills that he learned and perfected and did very well at when he's directing. And he's able to divorce himself. Just as when we had actor directors, they were able to take off their actor and be directors. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we go to Pell's quarters next. She's, well, we don't know it's a she quite yet. He pulls a case from under his bed, and then he takes off these fake lobes and the jacket and leans back. And we see clearly the fake lobes, the big lobes are much smaller.
And it wasn't just the lobes. Thank you.
And then suddenly when she takes her jacket off, you see her breasts. And it's like,
her bosom. Yes,
for sure.
What was that tool that she used, Robbie? Anyone see? It looked like a little, like a farmer's scythe. Exactly. It looked like a tiny scythe. Yeah. And then I don't know what it was, but that's what she used to pull them off. But she didn't need them later in the episode. Spoiler. But
yeah, she just yanked them later.
Yeah.
And kudos to whoever figured out how to do that.
Oh my gosh.
Because obviously that's a lot of makeup work to do that so that it looks believable. I'd have to see it a third or fourth time to really see how did they do that so that it was seamless. Now the expression that we've used several times, you have the lobes. Now I understand, it's a sexist remark that female Ferengi don't have as large ears as the males do.
That's right.
And so it's really a sexist as well as an entrepreneurial remark.
Yeah because they think they're smarter because they have bigger lobes.
We can reference other parts, other organs on the human
body. Let's just keep going. What's the next scene, guys?
Okay, we're at the airlock. We're at the airlock waiting for the
dozy doze.
We're waiting for the dozy to arrive, and Kira jumps because Zek is there and somebody touched her butt or pinched her butt or something. And she threatens Zek in this scene.
Yeah.
You do it again and you're dead. She's mad about it.
Yeah.
Then the airlock opens and some dozy flies through the air or some stuntman being tossed out of the airlock. And then this big buff guy in Glatu steps out and explains, we just had a small disagreement. So Quark is a little nervous about these.
Is it like not Oompa Loompa makeup?
Oh.
I mean, when I saw that color, I was just they're like Oompa Loompas with like.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And it reminded me of the original series in a way.
It felt very vintage or retro. It did. It looked to me kind of Cirque du Soleil. It looked like circus kind of.
Yes.
Circus. Yeah.
But I will say for a species, they are so aggressive. They make Klingons look like Girl Scouts in the way that they do, you know, how they go by their day to day. It's a little crazy.
Yes. And Quark was nervous. If they, you know, if they're going to toss somebody like that just for a minor disagreement, he's in big trouble.
Was that guy dead? Is he dead? What happened to that guy?
I don't think that guy's dead. Later on, they shoot somebody.
But they never show that guy that got thrown get back up in this scene.
No.
You don't. Okay.
That's how they do it.
Yeah.
That's how they do business.
Yep. Okay.
We go to Quark's quarters. This time, Quark is very nervous. Pell is there, and they're negotiating with Inglatu, the big buff guy. They offer this package of a lot of technology in exchange for 10,000 vats of Tula berries. And Inglatu says, I can give you 5,000. They say they want to talk to the Grenegs. They don't want to, they're not respecting Quark at all. He's nervous. They don't respect him. They want to talk to the Grenegus. Inglatu grabs Quark and threatens to kill him when Pell stands up for Quark. And he backs down when Pell gets a little aggressive. He kind of seems to respect that. And he says, I'll consider 10,000 at the end of the scene. Do you remember getting grabbed by this actor, Armin?
No. And you know, no, I didn't. And at least he didn't hold me by the throat.
That's what I was wondering. Because this one, to me, seemed much more controlled.
Now, remember, in the other situation, it was a series regular grabbing another series regular's throat. In this case, it's a guest star. Guest star is not going to be that desirous to grab a series regular by the throat.
And this is Brian Thompson, the teddy bear off camera, Brian Thompson.
That's right. Exactly. but I do, it's really wonderful for the storytelling to see Pell, who we now know to be female, to be more aggressive, to be more machismo than Quark is, and showing us by her actions that she's comparable to any Ferengi male that we have met so far.
Yeah.
Definitely. And loyal, and enormously loyal.
She's really, just a global comment about that character. She is smart. She knows how to work all the sides. She's got confidence. She stands up to the bullies. Like, she is the perfect Ferengi in a way. Like, she can navigate any situation.
Yeah. Exactly. We come to understand this is a deserving, this is a deserving person that we should come to like a great deal. And yeah. I'm giving something away here, but it is a great disappointment to me. This is the only episode that Pell is in.
Oh.
Yeah, I agree.
That's a bummer. All right, we're in Ops now. We have Mayhairdo. Yeah, I said it now. Mayhairdo coming up out of the turbo lift with a gift. It's a gift for Kira. And it's this little tiny, it's latinum covered earring. So it's actually a very expensive gift.
Very expensive.
Yes.
Earring.
And then leaves. Dax, Kira doesn't want to accept it, but basically she has to. He just doesn't stay. He leaves. But I just love, Mayhairdo never says a word in the entire series.
No. And this is the first time I think that we are shown that Mayhairdo just does not speak.
Yeah, because they try to talk to him in this scene, and he doesn't even respond.
He cannot speak. I used to be an official at the Screen Actors Guild. I think a lot of people know that. It is interesting to me, going back to our original discussion, it is interesting to me as an ex-official that Tiny Rom, who speaks not a word, and who is indeed a guest star, gets guest star billing. Okay, he should. That's fair. That's what should be. And yet Mark Shepard, who plays Norm, a very recurring character, who speaks not a word, is relegated to the background community. There's something wrong about that.
Oh, 100%.
It comes down to money, right? Because they're paying Mark Alan Shepard extra money, extra rate or background actor rate. And if they gave him billing, they would have to give him some kind of co-star rate, and it would change the budget. And now they'd be locked into that.
Yeah, but the difference, Robbie, is a couple of bagels.
I agree with you. But in their minds, they're like,
yeah,
nope, we're not going to, they don't want to cross that bridge. It's funny because in Canada, and I've worked a lot in Canada, the Canadian Guild, and the guild that I most work with is UBCP, which is the British Columbia Union of Actors. If you have a non-speaking actor in the frame and the director, and they're doing anything where they are featured in the frame, even if there's more background actors behind them, if they are featured playing, an emotion or a story point, then they get paid as an actor rate. Wow. They don't get paid the background rate.
Wow.
So they don't even have to speak. Yeah, it's much more fair. They don't even have to speak.
And you shouldn't have to, because acting isn't just when you speak.
Yeah.
And 100%, the background can ruin a scene if they're not acting.
Right.
Right. I think we had excellent background actors. They were 100% in the scene with all of us helping tell the story. So, I mean, we've all seen movies or shows where the background kind of ruins it and stands out like, no.
Kira gets this earring, this very, very fancy earring. She says she can't stand Ferengis, basically. And then Dax reveals she likes them.
Yes.
She thinks they're the most fun species of all. And which I had no idea. That's a whole new angle on Dax.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I love that she's playing Tongo. She's telling Kira they're awesome. They're a lot of fun. It's a new perspective on Ferengis and Dax.
But Dax does even make that comment. Their behavior toward women is somewhat primitive. So it's, there's a limit to how far her, waving the Ferengi flag goes, I feel.
Yeah.
And I think, though, what I like about Dax's point of view, it's respecting different species or different cultures for what they are, and not try to change anyone and say my way's better.
Right.
You have to honor that people are living their truth, mm-hmm. and then take what you can from that and enjoy it, or don't spend time with them.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I would point out is don't ever group every person in a culture the same. Do not don't make a general oversight because somebody is such and such. That means all of them are such and such.
Yeah.
Individuals are individuals who may belong to a group, but that group doesn't necessarily define each and every person in the group.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she lives with Nog. Kira lives with Nog. Kira lives with Ram. They are not necessarily bad people.
First, when you said that, I'm like, she doesn't live with anyone.
They're lovers.
You know, she should know better. But again, this is the good thing about our show, Garrett, is that we are showing the foibles of the characters as well mm-hmm. as their good points.
Yeah.
Yeah. We do go back to Quarks for another Tongo game that Dax is taking everybody's money again. She's winning. She is so good at this. Even the Negus tries to cheat and say, what is he? He says, did I say acquire? No, I meant evade. We should just play the round over. Very funny little bit.
The weird thing is, though, Armin, did we shoot this scene before we shot the first scene? I don't know why this felt like this was the one we did first.
I don't remember.
It's because I thought Wally was with us when we were making the game up.
That would make sense.
I have no memory of that. I'm an old.
It makes sense just makeup and schedule wise that you'd get everybody through makeup together with the larger group, which is this group, and then do the earlier scene with the smaller group.
Right.
I don't remember. But if I may, I want to go back to the scene in Ops quickly, because Dax says something I think everyone should hear, not only for this episode, but for life.
Yeah.
And it's in regards to what I was just talking about. Dax defends the Ferengi by saying, you don't understand them. And this is what I think is incredibly wonderful. Mm-hmm. Because, she says, because you don't socialize with them the way I do. And that's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. We don't like people until we socialize with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Until we meet them on a one-to-one basis. I think that's quite brilliant thing for Dax to say, and I think it's an even more brilliant thing for the writers to write, because that is the essence of what causes dissension amongst people. Mm-hmm. If you don't really get in and rub elbows with people, you don't know who they are.
Yeah,
you don't.
I'm glad you went back.
It reminds me of when we were in school and elementary, and you'd want to stay with the people you felt comfortable with, but the teachers would sometimes pair you up with someone you didn't know. And at first it would feel scary, but by the end of the day, you've made a new friend because they're not scary anymore. Now you've gotten to know them.
Exactly.
That happens a lot, I think. And it would be great if we did it more as adults.
I think so.
So back in Quarks after the Tongo game and Dax winning some more, and the Nega is trying to squeeze out of losing. He tells Quark that he now wants 100,000 Tula berries, and Quark panics. He doesn't even think he can get 10,000.
100,000 vats of Tula berries.
Vats, yes.
Yes.
Vats of Tula berries.
Yeah.
Quark is panicking, but then Pell jumps in, praises the Negus's idea, and tells Zek that, you know, Quark is an amazing negotiator. He's great at this. And Zek is flattered by Pell, and then he asks for fresh tube grubs, which sound delicious. And Quark heads over towards the bar. Pell follows him over there. And at the bar, Quark is panicking. He doesn't think he can get 100,000 vats. Pell says, you can do it. And Quark wonders, asks Pell, why are you being so nice? And that's when Pell says, I want 20%.
And so that's when she says, for my
20%. Yeah. She's already negotiated that earlier. Yeah.
For my 20%, exactly. Yeah. And then Zek calls for his grubs. Pell and Quark go back over to the table, but the scene finishes on Dax.
Yeah.
You see Dax at the end looking at Pell, and you know that Dax is figuring something is up here. So, yeah. Nice way to end that scene. A lot of stuff happened.
And what do you think? I know it's a long time ago, Terry, but what do you think you were thinking at the time? Because several thoughts came across my head about what she might be thinking. But I'd be fascinated to know if you can remember, and I wouldn't be able to remember, but if you can remember what you were thinking at the time. What do you think Dax saw at that moment?
Her attraction to Quark.
That's okay. Mm.
That was one. She was picking up on that.
Yeah.
But she wasn't picking up, as we find out in the scene with Pell. Well, we can talk about that in a second. But I think just that she knew something was up with Pell's attraction to Quark, not with the gender. That would concern Dax. That's what's so great Dax. That wouldn't be an issue at all. It's like, Pell's into you was the important piece of information.
We do see Dax go join Pell by the Replimat.
The girl bonding scene here.
A nice scene. Email. I like the scene a lot.
Isn't it sweet?
A wonder.
So sweet.
Yes,
another
wonder.
Yes.
No.
Another wonder.
Pushes in on close-ups. It was the two of us. I like it when you see the whole scene like that.
It's great.
And actually, that's exactly what David said. This is why he made it a wonder. He wants to see the actors act. He wants to see them doing what they naturally do without intercutting here and there. He wants to see the rapport as it's happening and not intercut it with other things. And Robbie, will you do me a favor, and anyone out there who doesn't understand when we say wonder, what a wonder is?
A wonder just means that there's no editing involved, that the scene from beginning to end, or the shot from beginning to end, has no cuts in it.
It's continuous.
It has no editing.
Yeah.
It's one shot.
Yeah.
Often one of the strengths of filmmaking is that you can cut, you can edit, you can cut into a point of view shot. You can go tight on an insert. You can build a story through shots. But when you do something in a wonder, or something like this scene where you see two actors acting, like you said, Armin, then it becomes more about the acting is in control of the scene and not the editor or the cinematographer or anything. The actors are living in the space, the context of the scene, and you get to see the whole thing play out.
And I would venture to say, and not having been ever a director with a camera, that it's a way of a director protecting his or her butt, because if there are no interstitial shots, then you have to accept the wonder as the only piece of material you have to edit into the final product.
Yeah. It limits your ability to fix details, or if you get a note from a studio or network, hey, we don't love the way Dax reacts to this line. Is there coverage of that? Can we look at some other takes? If it's a wonder, there are no other takes. This is what you get. So,
and just again, to add to that, usually it's a longer take. It can be a full page or longer. And that means everybody, the actors, the cameramen, the sound people, every costumes, makeup, everybody has to get it right while we're shooting it.
Yep.
There cannot be a mistake from any department, because there's not going to be any cuts.
It's more like doing a play that's being filmed, which makes it, I think, more fun.
Yeah.
I've said this before. Vincent Minnelli is one of my favorite directors, old Hollywood director, and did a lot of very complex wonders. And David Livingston often reminds me of Vincent Minnelli's work in these kind of designed, beautifully designed choreographed shots. So
He's cool. Very happy about doing wonders, he told me.
Yeah.
Because it does, as I said, allows the actors to act.
The female bonding scene, Dax says, I can tell you love Quark. And Pell admits, yes, she does. And then she admits to Dax that she's a woman in disguise. Dax is surprised here.
It's a lovely, lovely reaction by Miss Farrell. It's a wonderful, wonderful reaction, where she is both amazed and yet it covers it enough so that she's not being obnoxious to Pell. It's a really, really nice response, Terry.
Thank you. I think more over impressed, right?
Yeah.
Impressed, yes. Because I...
Impressed by what she pulled
off. You fooled
off.
Me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And Dax does say, I've never met a Ferengi female before. So that's kind of a big deal, you know.
Yeah, with nine lifetimes, you think that Dax would have met a Frankie Fimo at least
unless
once.
She went to Perenganar, she wouldn't have done it.
Right? No, yeah. Because they're not allowed out.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, I must say, this is perhaps the only problem I have with the episode. Okay. And that's, I think Pell admits way too easily for me, having kept this secret for as many years as she has, mm-hmm. that she just blurts out that she's a female. I know it's part of the story, you have to do that, but it just seemed, if there's a missing scene, I would have liked another scene with the two of them talking. And then finally she admits that she's, this happens way too abruptly for me.
I agree with you 1,000%. I felt exactly the same thing, but I validated the whole scene by saying that Pell could feel the energy of Dax and trust Dax with that. And so she just let it slip. She didn't feel, she was so comfortable with Dax that she was willing to trust her that easily.
And Dax knew, you know, she was the only one to say, you love Quark. I see it. Yeah. I see you.
And as I said to Terry before we started, I love the fact that Dax says, and I love Quark too. I'm grateful that Dax's character was fond of my character as well. Because nobody else is, well, let me tell you.
Dax is
I'm glad they wrote that for us.
Yeah.
Right? It was sweet that they wrote that for us.
Quark. Yeah. Dax is the only character that hasn't thrown Quark across the room or grabbed him violently. Dax is literally the only non-physical assault character. Non-violent character towards Quark. It's good.
Well, it's a lovely scene. Quark shows up at the end. He says to Pell, it's time. Pell, it's time. We don't want to keep the Dozai waiting. Hurry up. And off they go to Quark's cafe for some negotiations where we start the next scene upstairs in Quark's. Zek is up there. Kira goes to return this earring. I do like the beginning of this, though. Zek's, it's like some female background actors walk by and you see Wally Shawn, Zek, like completely lecherously checking them out. It's just, I love everything he does. He makes it so funny and interesting. Yeah. But Kira does come back with the earring. She doesn't, she can't accept that gift, but she does thank him for the bryozine nitrate. And then as she leaves, he pinches her butt or slaps her butt again. We see below, and she just stops, and to herself, she's like, Dax is crazy. Yeah. But she's controlling her anger now.
Funny.
Yeah, she is. Great.
Yeah. I don't remember ever hearing that before, so it made me laugh out loud.
Yeah.
Oh, of course she thinks I'm crazy.
Yes. Yeah. Quark and Pell do arrive, and they inform the Negus that the Dozai left. No contract. They couldn't make a deal. Quark is very nervous. He gets on his knees, even begging for forgiveness, basically. And the Negus is yelling at Quark. When Pell intervenes again, she says they can go to the Gamma Quadrant, get them to sign it there. They just need to borrow Negus's ship. Quark says he can pilot it, and the Negus does agree, but he warns him, do not mess this up. So, change of plan.
I love that scene too. I love how she swept in, and I loved how it's like struggling. Armin, Quark, you're right there. How Quark's like, I can pilot a ship. Who knew we could pilot a ship?
Oh, look at that.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty dang cool.
Yeah.
And again, I think this scene is a oneer. I think this is a oneer.
Yeah.
Is it?
I think so. I think
there's quite a few of them in the episode for sure.
Yeah. He's very good. He likes shots with two or three people in them, and oftentimes there are two principals in the shot, and then there's a third person who's important to the scene but has no lines, is sort of in the background, caught between the two people that are talking. Mm-hmm. I found that fascinating as I was watching as well. So again, kudos to Mr. Livingston for his
And
you know, I was thinking about that lecherous look of Zek's. That must have been David too, because after all, David or the second AD, but I would assume it would be David, decides who's going to walk by in a scene. I'm sure that they're walking by is not in the script. So he's decided, and he's probably told Wally, if Wally didn't think of it himself, to give them a look.
Yeah, directors are important for that.
We go into Zek's ship next. Quark is flying. They're flying to find the Dozai. And Quark reveals here he thinks the Negus is trying to sabotage these negotiations. You know, he's asking for 100,000 vats now. It just seems crazy. Pell agrees. She thinks that the Negus knows more than he's admitting to, that there's something else going on here. I love in the scene when Quark says, you know, the only thing I've done right is to pick Pell as his assistant. I thought that was a very sweet, sweet thing for Quark to say, a sweet side of him. There's this awkward moment. Yeah. You can see Pell's about to tell him the truth. And then she says, yeah, I've got to tell you something. And he interprets that of, oh, it's your percentage. Oh, yeah, I knew you were going to bring this up. It's about your commission. And he says, "Do never let friendship come before profit." You can see her disappointment there. She does not tell him that she is.
I was glad. I was like, "Don't tell him. Don't tell him. So, wait till the deal's done."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
wait till the deal's needs done. You.
He needs you, pal. Don't show.
Yeah. And he's also Quark's also dealing with this feelings that he doesn't understand. He's getting very attached to his associate, and he's getting vibes and feelings that don't make sense to him as a male Ferengi. And we can see that she wants him to understand his feelings, but he, being the Ferengi that he is, brought up in the way he was, he just puts them out of, no, I won't do that. And goes to the obvious, what any other Ferengi would have thought. This is a negotiation. Ferengis are about negotiations.
Yeah.
Well, that scene when you're in there, and there is that awkward moment when Pell is looking at you, and it looks like she's about to have a kiss. Well, also, and you're looking also very intently. And I also felt you played it as if I am becoming attracted to this male Ferengi in a way. And it looked like you were about to go in for a kiss. Am I correct?
I think you're absolutely right. As I remember doing that scene, that is exactly what I felt.
Yeah.
I have to understand my Shakespearean background. How many Shakespearean plays do we have males having tender feelings about what they think are other males, and only to find out at the end of the play that they're females?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Another problem, but they've already established, I think, Ferengi ships. But I looked at that. It's a very cramped space the two of them are in.
Oh, yeah.
Very cramped. The ceiling is very low. They look like, you know, they had to be squeezed into a space shuttle or something like that.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, how does Mehar Du sit in that ship?
Great point.
Where does he put his head? Is he leaned over forward so much that it's uncomfortable? I just thought, my heart went out for Mehar Du looking at that ship. That's
tiny. Ron would never.
They should have had one really long chair and one tiny one. Yeah.
Or you could think about Zek's ship having sort of like, if it was a yacht and it has a little, it's pulling a dinghy along. Oh. So it's pulling an extra craft that's just to fit Mehar Du inside.
Mehar Du.
Yes. There you go.
We do go to Quark's, where Rom is making some drinks. And this is a scene, Armin, where I did notice David Livingston had done this a few times, where he was kind of behind some architecture and it was sort of framed in a frame. It was a frame in a frame. So you saw Rom mixing drinks, facing the camera, but you could see the set kind of framing the actor in the space. I thought that was nice. And David did it a few times in this episode.
There was an opening in Quark's bar. You've seen it many times. You've just never been on that side of it that often.
Yeah.
He shot through that opening. And then, as you said, you can see all of Quark's bar. And again, we have all the atmosphere back behind it doing what they do.
And this is a oneer, by the way. This is another oneer.
Another oneer.
Yeah, because Odo comes in, asks when Quark's going to be back. Rom reveals he's hurt, that Quark's ignoring him now because of Pell and everything. And Odo does say something. He says, you know, if I had a brother, I wouldn't let anybody come between them. And this is where Rom pops up I love the staging of this. Yeah. Rom's flustered. He's, you know, moving around, and Odo's just standing there, and Rom sort of disappears below frame as Odo says, "Yeah, I wouldn't let anybody come between me and my brother." And Rom pops up, Odo leaves, and then it just sort of pushes in on Rom there. That's the only movement in the scene, I think, is when Rom realizes he's got to take some action here.
And I don't know whose choice it was. Could be anybody's, could be all of them. I don't think the way Renee played it, I thought the way Renee played it was quite brilliant. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that would have been in the script. The point of that, if I had a brother, is probably to galvanize Rom to do something if he's jealous. And I think that's the point of the script. But I think Renee turned it on its head and made that moment wonderful about the fact that he is once more reminded that he's alone, that he has no family.
Definitely. Yeah, he says something like, I don't have a brother. Well, not that I'm aware of. So, yeah, he's...
If I had a dot, dot, dot brother.
Yeah.
And you can see him thinking about his being alone, single. Yeah.
There's a little anguish in it.
Yeah, it's a very personal sort of moment there. Very reflective. Yeah, it's nice.
Renee definitely had a lot of time off on this episode, but the few scenes that he was in, he had some good character
development. Not as much as Cullum.
That's true.
Or Sirach.
Yeah,
that's right.
Cullum was probably working on another movie. That's what he was doing. So he was still working, not on our set.
No, he was in Ireland at the time, clearly doing a film.
But this does galvanize Rom. We cut to Pell's quarters, where Rom is just ransacking the place. He's literally tearing fabric, it looked like. He's like looking for anything, for something. He finds the ears in a box under the bed. He opens the box. There's fake lobes in it. He's busted Pell.
Da, da, da.
It was funny because we went in there and I thought, how does she have all this stuff? Because seemed like she had like next to nothing when we saw it with her. Yes. And I was a little perplexed how Terry. It was almost,
I agree with you 1,000%.
Like they went a little overboard.
Initially, I thought he was in his quarters being so frustrated. He was throwing things around in his quarters because of the sheer amount of belongings that were there.
It was too much.
Yeah. I agree.
Very quickly, the script says that, yes, Rom is looking through things, but David decided to start the shop from down below and then come up on Rom, which he thought was a very creative choice. It made it much more interesting.
Yeah, there was a lot of cool shots for a scene that really had one line in it. It was one actor ransacking a room, but he was under the bed. He was camera movement discovering Rom, and it was well shot. It was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Now we go to the Dosai meeting space. Looks like a bar or I don't know what it is. There's barrels of wine pouring into a tub. They're mingling around this bar, nightclub, whatever it is. Clearly they like to fight because you hear off camera a fight and then a shot and you cut over and there's a Dosai laying on the ground who's been shot. They drag him out. Zairi, the female Dosai, tells Quark that the Dosai are very serious about profit. And that's when Quark has an idea. He's like, oh, I get it. They're so serious. He goes over to the muscle guy in Glatu and demands that he sign this deal for 100,000 vats of Tola berries. And in Glatu says that's impossible. And Quark goes over and throws one of the wine barrels. He's like, he's playing their game here. He's getting he's very getting serious, aggressive. Very aggressive.
Yeah.
Tough guy.
Yes.
Didn't you guys think that for that race of who they were, of as aggressive as they were, that environment, that set was so contradictory. There was like white linen flowing.
Sexy.
It was just like, what is going on here?
It was a sexy, cool, hip club they were in. Yes.
It was a club. It felt like a nightclub. Yeah.
Do you agree that that didn't really add up in terms of who they were? I would think it would be more dungeon-y
looking.
That's
kind of interesting though, too, isn't it? To have the juxtaposition of the things so
of
off.
That?
Yes.
Okay, yes.
Like
I suppose.
this wild race of people.
I just felt like the set director didn't get the memo of what with who these people were. I was just like, what is okay?
Well, they
you're
like,
right.
like
you're
fancy right. makeup on their face. They like the graphic geometric designs on their face. So maybe
and that's I what it. I thought would be on the wall. Fancy, crazy colors, but
sometimes
it was very
it's nice though when it doesn't hit the nail on the head.
Okay,
because the Klingons, yeah. they're. Their ambiance is very much
matching
their person.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's nice to see it be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Something
I'll buy
different.
That.
Sorry.
I'll go with that.
Yeah.
But Inglatu says, impossible. I can't give you 100,000. Quark throws. He gets aggressive, throws the wine barrel. And Inglatu. And Quark says, I'm not leaving until I have a signed deal. And Inglatu says, well, fine. Then stay. Enjoy yourself. Stay.
Yeah. It takes pulls the rug out from underneath Quark.
Yeah. Exactly. You don't scare
what?
Us.
What happened? Yeah. Just...
Enjoy our nightclub, Quark. Yeah. Have fun.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Well, Quark doesn't enjoy the nightclub. He goes to his guest quarters next that only has one bed. It looks like the honeymoon suite at the Dosai.
Was the bed nightclub. Concave? Was it kind of a weird I don't know. It looked like a weird shape.
They are a weird shape. They have... They didn't do square beds.
No.
They were usually like oval pod-ish kind of things.
Yeah.
Something from the Poconos. Yeah.
Yeah, it felt like something in the Poconos, the honeymoon suite. It had like flimsy, gauzy, sexy again.
Another
Terry. Yeah. It's another sexy space.
I'm happy.
Yeah. Just one bed. Quark is very tired though. He wants to go to sleep. He starts undressing, lays down on the bed, says to Pell, what side do you want? Pell is panicking. She's like, what are you doing? You're taking your clothes off. And then she says, let's toast to profit. And she goes over and pours them a little, looks like a beaker, like a science beaker
of
wine, blue wine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shot of
which is actually a good
wine,
thing for the Ferengi. It is very difficult to drink from a cup when you have all those prosthetic teeth in your mouth.
Oh, so the test tube is better for you to
test. The test tube is actually better. It's easier to manipulate than something with a cup because then it just comes down.
The teeth.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Wow. Smart.
You got to think about the makeup.
You do.
Yeah. Well, they toast to profit. They, the Quark immediately begins to relax. This Tolaberry wine is.
Yes, it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
It's very strong stuff.
Blue Kool-Aid.
They talk. They're getting closer and closer and closer. And then she kisses him and jumps on top of him, basically tackles him on the bed when Zairi enters.
You're so
awkward.
Attractive, Quark.
Yes.
She couldn't help herself.
Exactly. She can't help herself.
Quark doesn't really fight Pell off either.
No.
So,
no.
Just so you know.
I would have been a fool to have done that in this scene.
Right.
Yes. Zairi comes, as she says, bad timing. I'll come back later. Quark grabs her, though, and asks what she wanted. She says Inglatu can't sell them the 100,000 vats because there's not that much on the whole planet.
Yeah.
And she says, I know where you can get it, though. And
dun,
this
dun,
is where
dun.
We first hear about the Dominion.
Dun, dun, dun. Yes.
Quark's like, what? I've never heard of the Dominion. And Zairi says, well, the Karema. Karema, I think is how you pronounce
it. Karema.
Karema, thank you.
Yeah, I remember that because it sounds like caramel.
The Karema.
Like, yeah, the Karema.
I had to say it on Lower Decks. So that's the only reason why.
Well, the Karema are the key, she says, to the Dominion. And now Quark is putting it all together. What Zek was doing.
I think this is, again, fooling our perceptions of what we think should be. We've seen these funny characters called Ferengi, and they seem really stupid. They seem innocuous. They seem not a threat to anything. But look at the chess game that Zek is playing. Mm-hmm. He's not only playing with the... Jose was playing with Quark, and he's working moves, wheels within wheels. And it really shows that what the Ferengi, at least in Zek's case, are capable of, and what Quark will aspire to for 7 years to try to be that smart.
Mm-hmm. I liken it to chess, because he's
chess,
thinking moves way ahead of time.
Right.
In his game, in his mind, and he's watching it play out.
And kudos to the writers for doing that. And kudos to the writers to bringing in an element that is going to be enormously important to the thrust of the whole show and putting it in a Ferengi scene.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And just a drip. Just the name.
Yeah.
And the name.
Yeah, I do know. Robbie and I, clearly, we haven't seen very many DS9 episodes, but I am knowledgeable enough as a sci-fi fan to know that the Dominion play a huge role in DS9. Yeah. And for them to introduce them in season two, I thought this was an introduction that happened later, as in season four. But now we hear about them right here, early season two, which is exciting.
Yeah, very cool. Well, we go on Zek's ship, headed back. Quark and Pell are headed back. Quark is putting this all together, realizes Zek didn't want to deal with the Dozai. He really wanted to get to the Dominion, and Pell asks about the kiss. Doesn't he want to talk about the kiss? And he says, what are you talking about? You never kissed me. I don't want to talk about it again. So he's he's now, his focus has changed to Zek and the deal, and he does definitely just wants to stubble experience and not talk about it. He's focused on profit now.
Yeah.
So poor Pell.
And she's caught between her aspirations to be a successful being and these feelings that she has for Quark. You know, we've all been in that situation where we're being tugged two ways. And yes, I feel for Pell as well. Again, I wish we had seen more of her in the show as the fuck.
I agree. I would like to have seen her established before this. You know, a couple little scenes where she was just working and just a brief interaction, but something where you, you know, establish her, then it'd be great. Yeah, she could have done a lot of episodes.
Yeah.
We're back in Quark's. Zek is really mad. Rom wants to talk, but Quark says not now. Quark reveals to Zek he knows about the Dominion. He's discovered.
And before that, one gets the feeling that Zek really, for the first time, appreciates Quark. That he's played his chess move rather well.
Yeah.
And there's a sort of like, oh, then you are someone that I should consider. And I'm very appreciative of that. It really, if Quark wants anything besides profit and everything else, he wants the respect of Zek. And at that moment in this scene, he gets it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I saw that. It's a really nice moment when Zek realizes Quark has put all the pieces together, is very smart. And he says to him, because Zek reveals to Quark, he says, most of the information I've got consists of hints and whispers. And so he kind of spills the beans. He trusts you enough, basically, because you've proven yourself. It's a nice scene. He realizes that the Dozai don't know very much about the Dominion, and Zek offers Quark a commission at this point on everything that happens in the Gamma Quadrant if he can get a name. And Quark reveals the name of the Karama. And that's when Rom returns, drags Quark over into the bar, whispers in his ear, another kind of oneer in this scene. We see this tableau of just,
and he drags him far away. I mean, he's in the back of the, I mean, it's
into the middle distance of the bar.
Yeah. But David actually told me there was some discussion. He was very, at the end, very happy with the distance.
Oh, I love the distance.
Between Zek and where Rom and Quark
eventually.
It's enough of a distance so that you really don't hear what they're saying.
Exactly.
But it's not far enough away so that they disappear into the background. Yeah. And he was very, very happy with the distance.
Oh, he should be really proud. It was hilarious you fell over. You know exactly what he just told you. Yeah. And it was just like...
And he says, I don't see Quark. It in the episode, but he says... Maybe he saw it in dailies and that's what he remembers. He says, Quark bounces. He says, I wasn't happy that you bounced off of the platform because obviously there was a mat there for when I fell.
Yeah.
But I don't see it in the episode.
He says, didn't see it either.
No. I didn't either.
The mat?
They cut it well.
The mat is completely obscured.
You don't see it. The mat is out of,
no.
You don't see the mat. You wouldn't see the mat.
No.
But it's there for my protection.
But you don't even see a little...
Only he would have seen it as the director.
Yeah.
And of course, David is a perfectionist. So if I move just a hair's breadth up from the mat, you know, if I bounced a tiny bit, only he would see it.
Got it. It was still very effective.
Shame on you for being human.
Yes, exactly.
For being Ferengi.
Well, yeah, I'm just going to read what David wrote about that shot with Max looking through Pell's room.
So perfect.
This is what David wrote me. Another moment I really liked and want to give a shout out to the director for their brilliance. He's talking about himself, of course.
Yes.
The shot under Pell's bed across the ears box as Max appears upside down, takes the box, and the camera rises as he puts it on the bed and opens it. Cut to his close-up for his realization and the future intent. Now, he's very proud of that. He said, this is what the script said. It said, about that scene, it describes it, the place has been turned upside down. The camera pans over to Rom, who is desperately giving the room a thorough going over. He opens the closet, looks around inside, then notices the carrying case on the floor. He carries it to the counter, opens it, and slowly pulls out a pair of loaves. His expression changes from confusion to realization to joy. So I agree with David. I think the way he shot it is much, much more interesting than the way that Ira wrote it.
Yeah, than just going over to a closet and setting it on a counter. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. And that angle of upside down Rom is amazing from underneath the bed. I love it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Thank goodness for artistic license. Mm-hmm.
So next scene is in the infirmary. We see Quark is on a infirmary bed waking up. We reveal that Rom is there. Rom is enthusiastic. He wants to help. He's just trying to be a helper. He wants to tell Zek about Pell.
Yeah.
That Pell's been lying, and Quark says, no, I don't want anybody to know. Rom then asks, wait, do you have feelings for her? And Quark denies it at this point. And then Rom insists on telling Zek. He's going to do it anyway. It's for Quark's own good. And Quark offers, he says, you still want the bar, right? You would like the bar. He offers the bar to Rom if Rom stays silent. And I love Rom's answer at the end. Rom says, Pell, what about him?
What about him? Pell. Yes. So,
yes. What about Max him? Exactly.
Max is a brilliant comic actor and often had me in hysterics the moment the camera stopped rolling.
He really is. Rom is such an amazing character.
This offer that Zek has made Quark, this percentage of all the negotiations that are going to happen in the Gamma Quadrant is a huge amount of money, which is important for the ending as well of this episode. And the fact that Quark is willing to give Rom the bar in order to get this other fortune is really important for what happens at the end, how much Quark is going to lose and what he's aspiring for at this point.
Yes, great scene, great ending with Rom's comic reply. We go to Pell's quarters next, and Pell is out of her disguise when the doorbell rings. Quark enters, and he's flustered by this new look. He tells her, put on her lobes, put on your clothes, and tells her that she's got to leave, that he'll give her 10 bars of latinum. He's got it in a box. She says, it's not about profit anymore. This is about love. She loves him. He basically says it doesn't matter if he has feelings. She's got to go. She's got to leave. He doesn't admit his feelings to her.
He does in a way, in a Ferengi sort of way.
He does, yeah.
He offers her 10 bars of latinum. He doesn't have to offer her anything.
Right.
Yeah.
He wants her to have something to start a new life with.
Yeah, yeah,
That is atypical for a Ferengi. Mm-hmm.
He also replies, when she says, I love you, Quark, and I know you care about me too, admit it. And he pauses and you say, what difference does it make? So you don't deny it.
Yeah, but it's interesting because he says you'd never be happy being a Ferengi wife.
Yeah.
So in his mind, he's ready to marry her. And I feel that's a really telling statement as well.
Yeah.
He wants her to be happy.
Yeah.
Clearly he cares for her.
So. He does.
Mm-hmm. He more than cares for her. He does love her.
He does.
I don't know if he loves her, but he does definitely
care for her.
Well, he likes her because they great business partners, the two of them. That is a huge, huge big deal to someone like Quark.
Yes.
And to someone like Pell, in the sense Quark is finally admitting, despite all of his upbringing, everything that he's been told by his mentors.
Yeah.
Here's a woman that you could admire, respect, and feel that she had as good a mind as anyone on the planet.
Yeah.
And she had your back over and over and over again.
Over
she
and
had
over.
Your
yeah.
back.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And loyal. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That is a growing instance for this character.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very Huge. Happy for this episode because of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Agreed.
She says something, and I say, I would care. Does anyone remember mm-hmm. that?
Yeah, she says, then come with me to the Gamma Quadrant. No one there cares if I wear clothes or not. And Quark says, I'd care.
I'd care.
And Pell says, I guess I'd better start packing. And Quark says, I guess so.
David was kind enough to say that was one of his favorite moments in the episode, was my reaction by saying I care. Because he said, Armin, what you did was, yes, you were still respecting your education and what you had been taught, but you could see that it was difficult to say that it wasn't really difficult, but it was, you could see that it's
There's
hard for
him
to say, I'd care.
Yeah.
So you can see he's thinking about everything that he's been taught.
Yeah, there was definitely a pull, and you played that incredibly elegantly, Armin, to have walking that tight line or tight wire of your world that you know.
This new awareness, this new epiphany about women that he is beginning to understand. And again, thank you, Terry. And again, it's his maturation process, which he will go through for 7 years at this point, 6 years.
It's amazing that Max Grudenschik has already been established as the one actor that will bite into an insect.
And here he is biting
into the crawfish, which, yes. Robbie, was it a crawfish? I mean,
it looked like a crawfish to me.
Yeah, it
me
did.
Too.
But he really bit into, I mean, my question is, I think it was a real dead crawfish, because when he bit into it, you saw the innards of it come out, you know, and it was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. There aren't many things that are vivid in my imagination, in my memory. This one is one. This one. First of all, while I was doing that scene where we all seated around the table and just before Max bites into it, I had a horrible cold and my head was throbbing inside. And I must have had somewhat of a fever, because during some of the shooting of that particular scene, I distinctly remember must have fallen asleep, because I remember waking up hearing someone said cut, and I went, cut. I didn't hear action. And I know I don't know if they used it or not, but I know that they were shooting it over my shoulder so that, you know, they didn't care where my head was, but I was fast asleep. But before that, going to the crawfish, as I remember it, David asked me primarily first, will you bite into this thing? And I looked at it and I went, no. No. And Max went, I'll do it.
For extra screen time, actually.
Yeah.
Close up.
And I remember David said, okay, thank you, Max. All of us thought it was disgusting. Disgusting. He turned to the camera crew and said, we got to get this in one take. We don't want Max to do this more than once. So let's make sure everything is ready to get this. And then, Max indeed bit into that horrible crustacean, and the juices flowing out of his mouth. And it was disgusting. And I wasn't feeling well at that moment anyway. And I remember my stomach really turning at seeing him eating that.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the backstage.
Well, he did it. Okay. He really did it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Quark says, I am not hungry. at the top of the scene, which sounds like you really weren't feeling hungry for anything.
I was all I wanted to do was go to sleep.
Quark is not hungry. Pell arrives suddenly, and Zek says, is glad to see Pell in the beginning. Zek says, oh, Pell, you know, you're going to have a big future. You're awesome. Complimenting Pell as the male Pell that Zek thinks he is still. When Pell marches over and rips off the fake ears, Zek is furious. It was a very funny reaction to this. First terrified and then furious, threatens to punish Quark and Pell for, you know, first punish Pell and then punish Quark. And Quark says, I didn't know. And Zell goes, well, that's not
an excuse. I didn't know she was a female. Zek, right.
Yeah. Zek goes, that's not an excuse. But then Quark turns it around and says, oh, well, Pell helped you achieve this goal. So, you know, they'll have to put three of us in jail then because you're going to be punished too. And while Sean plays it beautifully, he completely stops. I see your point. So
he does say, I didn't know she was a female. And he repeats the,
same thing.
Ignorance is no excuse.
Right.
Yeah. But he does punish Quark by taking his commissions away.
And that's a huge punishment.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
This is what I was referring to before.
Right. This is a percentage of every single deal, future deal ever made in Gamma Quadrant would have gone
exactly.
to Quark. Yeah. Quark would have been, he would have been probably the second richest.
Very shameful, right?
After the Greg Negus. Yeah. Very much so. Male Pell, can we abbreviate it as Mel?
Mel?
Yeah. Male Pell is Mel.
Male Pell.
Male Pell is Mel.
Pell Mel.
Well,
Mel. Exactly.
Well, Quark has lost all of this riches. This basically, it's like the mega Powerball lottery he just won. Yeah, and then he just lost it. He just lost all of it.
David pointed something out to me that I didn't remember. There's this, when the ears come off, I put my hands over her ears to prevent people from seeing the loss. Yeah. He said that wasn't in the script. He said, you must have made that up.
Oh, wow.
No, that's cool.
Was it a natural
he said,
reaction?
That wasn't my idea, and you did it, and it wasn't in the script. So you must have just done that out of your own instincts. So,
well, bravo. Well,
it was great.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's
it was the perfect reaction.
Yeah.
Well, Zek takes away the Powerball lottery that you thought you won, and he leaves, and Quark is very disappointed. Like you say, it's a big loss. Pell apologizes for, you know, coming in here, but she wanted to make the point that women are as capable as men at all of this.
Yeah.
And Quark says, please just don't tell anybody else. And we have this tender goodbye moment where they kiss.
Mm-hmm. They kiss.
Yeah. It's very sweet.
It was lovely. It really was.
And it's cute, that final line. Well, then, I guess if I can't have you, I'll take those 10 bars of Latinum after all.
Yeah, she wants the money.
Yeah.
She has a Ferengi.
I do want to rewind just a half smidgen to when Zek leaves. I just love, he looks at Quark, he says, I've always said you were a bright fellow, Quark. And then he looks at Pell and says, shame on you, and then walks out. It was just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Such a funny little.
It's not only funny, it's enormously evocative of men who put down women. Because he says shame, there's something just slightly religious about that you've done something immoral.
Yes.
And at this point, we've all come to respect Pell. We all understand what she's going through. We all want her to do better in life.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And here is this sort of quasi-religious put down. I hope people understand that's the writers and the production saying something, again, enormously important.
Yeah.
This sort of attitude, this kind of unthinking put down is hurtful, painful, and wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well said.
Thank you, Armin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Our final scene is back in Quark's bar. Quark approaches Dax here and asks her to play some more tango. Wants to win some money back, I guess. It's not going to happen, Armin. Dax is good at this game.
But I like her company. It's worth it to me to have her there.
Oh, that's saying a lot.
Yeah,
I pay him back in other ways.
Oh my.
Dax does admit, though, that she's really going to miss Pell. And yes. She says to Quark, I know you'll miss her too. And Quark tries to cover here a bit, but Dax knows.
Nice try, Quark.
She knows Quark. She socializes with Frankies. She knows Quark.
I know. It's a whole new side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. There you go. Wow. What an episode. What a great episode.
This was a fun episode. It really was. And it was an episode that makes people think. It definitely is. It's one of those episodes.
And as we said several times, it also betrays our main characters as not perfect heroes.
Yeah.
Not forgetting about Quark, but the other people, except for Dax, but the other members of the
Dax is perfect. Ensemble,
are less than perfect.
Yes.
But you know what? Yes, this is two shows in a row that we have bittersweet endings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Two shows in a row where you're just like, oh, our heroes come this close to a true loving romance that elevates them. Mm-hmm. And it just slips through their fingers for rules, for, you know, everybody having, well, in an interesting way, respecting that their lives are going in different directions and they can't come together and make that happen. So it's bittersweet.
What was your lesson, Robbie, from this episode?
This has got a lot of lessons in it, but I guess if I had to pick one for me, the lesson is, what I wrote is, don't let old ideas from the past blind you to what's true today.
Oh.
That's my lesson.
Okay. Terry, what do you think of?
I wrote gender equality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I mean, look, we haven't even passed the Equal Rights Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
How long has that been going on? And so it's important that they wrote this episode. So that's what speaks to me, is she is doing just as good of a job, if not better. She did. Rom couldn't do what she did.
Mm-hmm.
She's a very intelligent person, and it doesn't matter what her gender is. Just very much what Robbie said. So you need to get, you know, don't judge a book by its cover or its or its lobes, rather.
Yep.
Well put.
Armin, what is your lesson?
I'm going to read what I wrote. The theme is the social issue of women having to exist under a glass ceiling. Their need to do extraordinary things in order to achieve things that men don't necessarily have to do. You know, they have to be extraordinary. Pell is extraordinary.
Mm.
And for her to be considered an equal, she has to do extraordinary things, whereas men don't have to do that.
That's so true in our world, isn't it?
It is true. Yeah, unfortunately. In fact, I wrote, which they shouldn't have to, which women shouldn't have to do that. The second thing I wrote, also a theme, also the preconceived, this has to do with what I mentioned earlier, also, that preconceptions need to be constantly reevaluated, even if experience and social mores have indoctrinated you otherwise. You have to constantly reevaluate what you think about things as more information comes in, and not be locked in to a point of view that was baked in years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Oh,
yeah. So I agree with all of you, everything that you've said, definitely the gender inequality issue, and also Armin's secondary theme, which is basically don't, you know, be careful of generalizations. It's so easy just to generalize. And so for me, yes, it's the gender inequality, but it's also the racial or species inequality that goes on in this episode too.
Mm-hmm.
Be careful
definitely.
Of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The winner of our Patreon poll for the theme and moral of this episode is submitted by Cody. Don't be afraid to go against societal norms and expectations.
Mm-hmm. Great, Cody. Great. Great theme.
Mm-hmm. Good job, Cody.
Well, that was awesome for everybody listening. Thank you for joining us today for this recap and discussion of this episode. Next time, we're going to be talking about the episode Necessary Evil. So please come back and listen to that conversation. For all our Patreon supporters, stay tuned. You're going to get all your bonus material coming right up.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.